just an announcement. You don't have to even spend any more money or anything. Just announce, we think the core group is unacceptable. But they of course won't do that because they don't really believe in Haitian solutions to Haitian problems.
Well, Eve, we'll leave it off there. And I implore everybody, if you want to hear the entirety of this interview, go to my website, guerrilla-radio.com, or go to gradio@substack.com. But after the break, I'll be joined by Tayan Cherepushka and Tyson Strandlin, and we're going to talk about the contretemps with the Ukrainian Student Society at the University of Victoria. Thanks again, Eve.
Moscow, Tokyo, New York, Guerrilla Radio is everywhere. At guerrilla-radio.com. Everywhere, all the time.
Chicago, Jakarta, Helsinki, Cape Town, Sao Paulo, Manchester, Bangalore, and somewhere in Russia I can't actually remember the name of.
Welcome back to Guerrilla Radio. Well, the University of Victoria Student Union has become another front in the Ukraine-Russia war. Last month, UVic's Ukrainian Student Society alleged harassment of its members and intimidation in the form of hate crimes, hate crime graffiti, scrawled on one of its posters. They've also made allegations of, quote, ongoing hate and harassment demonstrated by the YCL, or the Young Communist League. UVic's USS is, with similar student societies on campuses across the country, associated with the politically influential Ukrainian-Canadian Congress. Tayan Cherepushchak is an undergraduate student at the University of Victoria and is a Ukrainian-Canadian who, until recently, served as vice president to the UVic chapter of the Ukrainian-Canadian Students Union, or SUSC. And Tyson Strandlin is a member of both the UVic chapter of the Young Communist League and the Vancouver Island Peace Council. It's a local chapter of the Canadian Peace Congress. He, too, is a Canadian of Ukrainian descent who has studied in and visited Ukraine both before and after the 2014 Maidan coup. Welcome to the program, guys.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Well, Tyson, I'll start with you. UVic President Kevin Hall has pledged an investigation in response to complaints filed by the Ukrainian Student Society a couple weeks ago. Tyson, has the Young Communist League at UVic been approached by university or student union officials for comment on this yet?
Yes. Myself and another member of the YCL, the club organizer, have both been asked to give comments in regards to the sort of initial preliminary aspect of the investigation being carried out by the university's equity and human rights department, I believe. Now, my understanding is that this, as I say, is just sort of a fact-finding initial hearing, and that the actual investigation will be carried out by a third-party lawyer if they have the grounds to proceed following that.
I've read that the on their own site that the USS had asked for campus security to come and attend their last meeting because they were so worried. I know it's not your department, Tyson, but do you know, did campus security attend and act as, I don't know what, their guardians during that meeting?
No, I don't. I don't know whether or not campus security acted on those requests, but I did see that as well. I've also seen some of their members saying there should be a greater police presence on campus. But again, you know, getting into more of the actual meat of their complaints and their claims of increased violence and harassment, the YCL certainly isn't responsible for any reason they would need to have increased security at their meetings. I'm not exactly sure what they are expecting to happen.
And the YCL denies these allegations outright. Is that correct?
Certainly. Yeah. Certainly. Okay, the only truth of the matter is that the YCL made a post on its Facebook page about their slogan on their banner.
Yeah, and something that, were they claiming that copyright infringement or something, saying that the YCL put that on their Facebook page without asking permission? I didn't realize that taking pictures at public events required permission to post.
You know, you're absolutely right. They did make that claim. They used the language saying it was done without consent, which I think is, you know, quite cynical and sort of the broader use of language that they've employed to try and, you know, make it seem like a progressive claim. But not only that, The fact is the photo actually was taken with consent, which more recently they have admitted to.
Well, I wouldn't think that consent was necessary in any case, but all right. No. Well, so Ty, now moving to you, at campuses now across Canada, the Ukrainian student societies are voicing similar complaints. It's not just at UVic, and the complaints about harassment and expressing their fears for the safety and security of their membership. In an open letter published at the Times Colonist website February 6th, you write that the USS, the UVic Student Society, has also cited the Vancouver Island Peace Council as, quote, enablers of this harassment and spreaders of information about the war. Tyne, where does that allegation come from, and what do you think that they mean by that?
Yeah, there's been accusations and comments like this come out in the past week or so by the USS and by other campus groups across Canada, and by lots of their members that are alleging such things against anti-war and progressive groups. And this has all just come about at the same time in this past week across the country. In the case of UVic, we're seeing that against the Vancouver Island Peace Council and this YCL. I think I've seen it boil down to a confused association with any anti-war stance as being pro-Russia, as well as maybe personal frustration that these groups have with progressive campus groups. But most importantly, I think there's ideology inherent in the large organization that these student groups represent that we're seeing come out. And I think that's an important point to talk about.
Well, and let's do that. But where did you see these? I looked for these allegations and I didn't find them. Are they in print, like at their Facebook site, or where are they appearing, these charges against the Vancouver Island Peace Council as being enablers of harassment and spreading misinformation?
Well, there have been the statements that have come out by the USS and related organizations formally, as well as just comments made on social media by members of these groups. And a lot of the comments that people not necessarily associated with these groups have posted under the USS and other groups' pages that they've let stand and let stay up.
Okay. I don't want to make charges against them that we can't provide, mm-hmm. you know, a backup for. Sorry, Tyson, go ahead.
I was just going to mention that you can find a statement that's been widely shared on all the social media and elsewhere of the former president of the USS and one of the co-founders, Devin Serrata Goldie, has made these accusations against the Peace Council.
Yeah, we definitely.
Well, Tyne, now you were a former, as I said in the introduction, you until very recently, you were a former vice president with the UVic chapter. Why did you leave?
Yeah, that's right. I only left about a month ago exactly, near the start of January. I just left over, I guess, personal dissatisfaction with the way the group was handling cases like this. And once it finally all came to light, and I saw why I left, I feel like they've been waiting to publicize some of their anger in this way that I couldn't get behind myself.
Well, when you joined, the organization, was the political stance and the role of the overarching Ukrainian Canadian Congress not known to you, or
it really wasn't known to me upon joining it? Groups like this often portray themselves merely as cultural organizations, and they do a lot to promote cultural identity and activities. But especially since the war has escalated in Ukraine, it's become a lot more political rhetoric.
Yeah, they've got a lot of media coverage here in Victoria, and I'm just watching some of it on Czech TV and that. And their spokesperson there was stressing that, well, what we do is we teach people how to make ethnic food and the ethnic dances, and we celebrate the culture. It's nothing to do with politics or anything like that. I'm paraphrasing, obviously, but can you straighten us out on this, these rather disparate interpretations of the function of the, not only this branch at UVic, but across the campuses in Canada?
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's really not a fair representation of what they do that was portrayed in the media there. I'd say the group dynamic within the membership is definitely often talking reactionary political rhetoric. And the group that it's a part of larger, the Ukrainian Canadian Students Union, SUSC, and it's a member of the Ukrainian Canadian Congress, which definitely has a long history of political rhetoric and and political lobbying and action, that it's just not detachable all the way down, even at the campus club level.
Well, Tyson, you made an allusion to that this is more about the war and peace issues. You're with the Vancouver Island Peace Council. Can you expand on how the council's work and positions has perhaps drawn a target on its back and, by extension, the YCL?
Sure. I think one of the places this really started was with an anti-war action that took place, I think, about a year ago now, not long after the war started. And of course, it received some media attention, and it was much to the ire of the right-wing Ukrainian lobby, who, you know, have since then worked very hard to portray any opposition to the war as being pro-Russia or pro-Putin, or they'll go even farther and say that it is pro-genocide of Ukrainians. And these sorts of allegations are really absolutely over the top. And the fact is that it's just an attempt to discredit anti-war voices. And you know, I don't think they're doing any favors to the Ukrainian people by demanding this endless war down to the last survivor in Ukraine, and you know, potentially escalating things into a confrontation between NATO and the Russian Federation as nuclear powers. So you know, to phrase support for the war as the only position supporting Ukrainians, I think is frankly false. And the fact that these sorts of accusations are taking place across the country, as was mentioned, I think reflects a coordination and a broader attempt to discredit peace activists and any sort of anti-war voices that's taking place across the country and indeed internationally.
Tyan, your op-ed or your open letter printed at the Times Colonist's website, individual actors should be blamed for anti-Ukrainian harassment on campuses. Was that your headline or was that the TC's?
That was my headline.
Well, now, can you back up what Tyson is saying about a coordinated effort? From what you've seen from being inside the student union, the Ukrainian student union, is this all part of a coordinated effort on campuses across Canada and presumably in other countries as well?
Yeah, well, as far as the interactions between the Ukrainian groups on many on the campuses across Canada, it's definitely coordinated. They're all part of one body. And as far as the situation in Victoria here, it would be not only coordinated, but definitely planned out that this reveal of what they're experiencing.
Well, does that suggest to you that these charges are false or created or manufactured in any way, in your opinion?
In my opinion, I think the way they're being presented is definitely manufactured. You know, the Ukrainian Student Society here at UVic has reported a few incidents that they've said are harassment, like verbal harassment, and some people messing with their tabling setup before. The thing is, the way that they're portraying this really seems to be meant to confuse anyone who's learning about it, in the way that they bring up other organizations who aren't involved in these accusations.
Well, what about that, Tyson? And I'm not asking you if the Young Communist League is responsible for any of these things, but are you aware of these actual affronts happening both online and in person that the Ukrainian Student Society are complaining about?
No, I'm not at all aware. And, you know, I think the deliberate vagueness in their statement and elsewhere, their failure to actually identify anyone responsible for these actions is suspect, to be sure. Certainly should be questioned again with the timing. And I think the fact that they've tried to use that as a basis to, you know, have the YCL defunded as a campus club, deratified, and, you know, take out their political opponents is completely inappropriate. You know, even the things that they have, you know, pointed to, the accusations they've made, to be calling them a hate crime, I think is a serious stretch.
Well, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm talking today to Tyan Cherepushchak and Tyson Strandlin. They're both Ukrainian Canadians, or Canadians of Ukrainian descent. We're talking about the contretemps going on between the Ukrainian Student Society at the University of Victoria and groups that it accuses of fear of hate and harassment and even hate crimes, as Tyson has just said. This is something that's been going on, not just at least these allegations are not just involving UVic, but also at campuses in other places. And my friend Eve Engler, who I spoke to in the first segment of this show, has an article up at his site talking about how he, an event that he was holding, an anti-war event at Carleton University, had the plug pulled on it. His article on that is amidst hysteria, calling for peace is hate, more war is peace, an allusion to George Orwell. Tyson, I read your article about going to Ukraine. You were a student there, and you've written a very moving piece, Young Communist Leader Resilient Amid Brutal Repression in Ukraine. It's about your friend and comrade, Mikhail Kononovich, correct me on the pronunciation of that. Do you want to tell our listeners a little bit, Tyson, about who he is and what's going on, what you saw while you were in Ukraine?
Yeah, so Mikhail Kononovich is one of the Kononovich brothers who has been experiencing political repression and has been detained and experienced torture and beatings at the hands of the Ukrainian state. Ever since the Maidan coup in 2014, there's been moves against political opposition, and the Communist Party was among the first, despite being actually the third largest party in the country at the time. It was banned, and its members have been harassed and experienced really troubling things. Mikhail is the leader of the Komsomol in Ukraine, which is the Young Communist League. I was at school, as you mentioned, at university, doing my undergraduate at the time. I did some courses in Kiev, and I had the opportunity to meet with him and discuss that. And I, at the time, didn't publish my interview with him. It just kind of got put aside. But after he and his brother were detained on trumped-up charges of being pro-Russian agents, it felt important that I published that article. Now, I had been to Ukraine on a number of occasions. I'd been there before the coup, and I've been there after the coup, and you know, witnessing the sort of rise in the ultra-right slogans and phrases, and the rehabilitation of Nazi collaborators, not just at the on grassroots, but at the state level, you know, a celebration of figures like Stepan Bandera as national heroes. It's extremely, extremely troubling to see. There's a lot of European countries that, of course, have, you know, fascist and far-right movements in no small numbers. But the situation in Ukraine with this level of state support is something else altogether to witness.
Yeah, and you write about other Canadian students there who were totally into that cosplaying, as you say, Bandera and the whole, you could say they're insufferable Cossack cosplayers. But you say, quote, it's troubling to think that these same students would return to Canada to receive degrees in history and Slavic studies, and one day perhaps become professors or leaders of Ukrainian Canadian organizations. We've seen Ukrainian Canadian leadership at the highest levels in this country that are entirely four square behind increasing the war effort, I'll put it that way, and heightening Canada's involvement in that as well. Ty, what's your take? This is a divisive, obviously, in Ukraine. How about amongst your family and the community where you come from, the diaspora Ukrainians? What's your experience of the political reaction to the war so far here?
Well, it's definitely been varied. I think generally everyone has an attitude wanting, you know, peace and the end to the war. Within the diaspora community, though, there's differing views and that we see between people who want to continue the fight, as Tyson's mentioned, and people more on the side of peace, that even if it means making concessions or just to stop the fighting. And that's definitely manifested in the diaspora, both at an institutional level with the UCC portraying the more pro-war stance, but also within communities and families. To be honest, I really only began following it in this past year with the recent escalation. Like being fairly young myself, currently an undergraduate student, a lot of what was happening around 2013 and 2014 with Maidan was happening just as I was growing up and seeing scenes of Ukraine on, like Kyiv on fire on TV and all the scenes of this taking place on the news. So really, I've only begun following it recently and started to see my identity as a Ukrainian-Canadian be not just a cultural one, but having that manifest politically.
And does it make it a more visceral experience for you, your Ukrainian heritage, to see the home country, even though you're separated by some generations, in turmoil in this way?
It certainly made it different, the way I understand being Ukrainian-Canadian. Yeah, me and my family included. It's brought to light the differences between being, you know, a third generation Ukrainian-Canadian versus being actually someone from Ukraine themselves and seeing the differences at play there.
How about you, Tyson?
You know, as a historian myself, I tend to look at it from a big picture about, you know, where this all really started. Of course, going back to the collapse of the USSR and the many benefits that people in Ukraine had that they've never got back, from free healthcare and education and high wages and pensions. And the fact is that the growing national, far-right nationalist movement, has had to fill the space that hasn't ever been filled. The quality of life has never been what it was. And so they've replaced sort of these sort of public services and benefits with crude far-right ethno-nationalism. Of an old variety that's been stirred up from decades past. Again, looking at the broader history of Ukraine, and you know, when the coup took place, it was explicitly because they were tired of even having any sort of compromise between Ukraine's different language groups, right? And this is important to differentiate, because some people will use the term Ukrainian in the ethnic blood and soil sort of sense. But in reality, many people who consider themselves Ukrainian nevertheless use Russian as their first language, and it doesn't make them any feel any less Ukrainian, particularly in the eastern regions that broke away after the coup, which basically nullified their own votes in the presidential elections. There's been thousands and thousands of casualties in the 8 years leading up to the actual Russian invasion, the bombing of the eastern regions by Kyiv. And, you know, I saw no outcry of what was happening to Ukrainians in the right-wing Ukrainian community in Canada, for all those years.
Yeah, Western sympathies for the Ukrainians now during this this war with Russia are extraordinary, but then the silence regarding the same Ukrainians being bombed in the East since 2014, that silence is deafening as well.
Exactly. It's very, very telling that the fact that they're selective, and it underlines the fact that this is a distinctly political issue. The fact that the Ukrainian Student Society at UVic was trying to bring attention to certain so-called political prisoners who had been convicted of terrorism in Crimea, and yet they had nothing to say about the imprisonment of the Kononovich brothers on political grounds during the week of action, for example, that took place internationally in November. It points very much so to Tyan's point that this is more than just a cultural group. It is a political organization.
Well, now, how would you suggest, Tyson, Canadians that are concerned, how they would express their political dismay at not only our government, but I mean, what's going on in the war, while retaining the sensibility of the real effects of that war on people on either side of the issue within the country. I guess what I'm fumbling towards is trying to find some appropriate level of political discourse on this, if I can put it that way.
You know, while it's quite easy to simply shake our fists at the Russian Federation, what I think takes a lot more and puts a lot more pressure on our government is actually acknowledging the role that Canada has played as a member of NATO, that NATO has played in instigating this war during that whole period of bombing the eastern regions. There was two agreements that were made, Minsk 1 and Minsk 2. And the reality is that the regime in Kyiv violated the terms it agreed to. Not that that justifies the war. You know, we can have some nuance about this without justifying one side or another. The war is at the cost of you know, regular people in Russia and Ukraine. And if it expands outwards, to the cost of the whole world. And, you know, even in terms of the costs we're paying at the grocery store and inflation and gas, this is to nobody's benefit. So, you know, right now with these attacks on the peace movement and on calls for peace, we need to be making those calls even louder than ever. Canadians need to protect free speech and you know, legitimate criticism of Canadian foreign policy. We need to get out. And as we're approaching the one-year anniversary of the war here, we need to have a very loud and determined opposition to pro-war policies of any kind and for de-escalation of the conflict as urgently as possible.
Well, and Ty, you're as an undergrad, what about how this issue can be addressed on campus?
Well, as far as the actual issue on campus goes, there is UVic beginning to lead the investigation, although the means by which they're doing that are not perfect. So I'm waiting to see how that plays out and how we are all involved in it. But other than that, I'm personally taking a step back from all this and seeing how it plays out.
So Tyson, now the Young Communist League, you said that there was a request that they be delisted.
Yeah, that was one of the demands made by the Ukrainian Student Society, that the university end its support for the YCL as a club. It's been a club on campus for 10 years this year, always active in the anti-war movement and you know, other progressive causes such as the fight for free education, fighting against hate, discrimination, racism, sexism, transphobia. So again, you know, trying to depict the YCL as a pro-hate or, you know, organization is just, there's no way to substantiate that whatsoever.
And how do you place this in the larger context of Canadian politics, where we see the federal government especially being super vocal and willing to send billions worth of armaments and money to one side of this conflict?
Well, you know, again, this is a matter of the very pro-war policies of the Canadian government. And I think more Canadians need to be concerned with the fact that we've got a serious economic crisis here in terms of people being able to pay their rent and to feed their families. And, you know, I just saw an article recently that even UVic students are dumpster diving and bartering to try and get enough food to eat. So the fact that nobody is concerned about, you know, billions and billions of dollars being spent on new fighter jets and billions being sent in terms of arms to Ukraine and this fight that nobody is going to win, we really need to be making some more of these connections. I think the fact that the YCL and peace movements are being targeted the way they are now is reflective of that. And, you know, we need to be very, very concerned about these sorts of movements, and we need to stop this before it goes any further. If, you know, it does turn out that any legitimate criticism of Canadian foreign policy becomes deemed criminal or hate or whatever else, that is going to have consequences that go way beyond, you know, the YCL as a club at UVic. That is going to have consequences devastating for the peace movement and for, you know, democracy and academic freedom at all in this country. And it's a scary direction to be going in.
Yeah, and in more ways than one in this country. We've just been talking in the previous segment about Haiti. Well, Tyne Cheropushchak, sorry, Tyne, his piece is Individual Actors Should Be Blamed for Anti-Ukrainian Harassment on Campus. The Times columnist has it up for now at its website. Is there somewhere else, Tyne, that you can that people could access that in case the Times loses it?
It's currently just in the Times columnist. It might. I'm going to submit it to the university paper as well, but that's the only place right now.
Well, Tyne and Tyson, thanks a lot for coming on. And I want to also thank Eve Engler and remind you to go to his website, eveengler.com. That's all I got for this week. Until the next time. Thanks, guys.
I heard them marching, chanting, kill them all. I saw millions of people Trapped behind ghetto walls, I saw the soldiers shooting every Friday afternoon. I saw some exposed to sickness, with others made immune. I saw the tear gas in Al-Aqsa, eyes open wide. I saw the mob attack the motorist and beat him till he died. I heard the generals lying. I saw the tanks moving in. I heard the settlers shouting, "Let the killing begin." Look up above, hear the ear-splitting sound. Watch the buildings crumble to the ground. See the planes in the sky thereby.